From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Saturday, September 23rd, 1978, when more than 800 people gathered at what is now the Federal Building in Rochester for the Rally for Rights. The protest was in response to Anita Bryant's Save Our Children Coalition and its successful push a year earlier to stop an ordinance in Dade County, Florida, that forbade discrimination due to sexual orientation. After residents in Dade County voted to repeal the ordinance by a margin of more than 2-1, Bryant told journalists, quote, "All America and all the world will hear what the people have said, and with God's continued help, we will prevail in our fight to repeal similar laws throughout the nation, which attempt to legitimize a lifestyle that is both perverse and dangerous," end quote. When Rochester residents and activists from around the country joined the Rally for Rights in 1978, they became an active part of a resistance movement that continues today. LGBTQ activists say their community is challenged by the same threats to their civil rights that their predecessors faced, and locations like the Federal Building are part of a history that seems to repeat itself in some ways. And that's the lesson organizers shared with more than 100 people yesterday during an LGBTQ historic walking tour through downtown Rochester. It was part of the new LGBTQ Landmark Initiative. And this hour, we're joined by leaders in the LGBTQ community and the Landmark Society to discuss that initiative and how local historic places have played a part in the movement from the 1970s to today. That was the first tour they had last night, and about 100 people came out. So I'd say Larry Francer, what a start. He's the Associate Director of Preservation for the Landmark Society of Western New York. About 100 people, right?
Actually, close to 120. We're saying 120, yeah.
That's a big number.
It's great. We were shocked, thrilled. It was just great.
Well, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Wayne Goodman's Executive Director of the Landmark Society of Western New York. Wayne, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
Evelyn Bailey is historian for the Out Alliance and an archivist for the LGBTQ community of Rochester. Evelyn, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Kevin.
And Carol Ebersole Weiss is member of the steering committee for the Human Rights Campaign of Greater New York, actually, on their National Board of Governors, and the Western New York coordinator of the Human Rights Campaign of Greater New York here. Carol, welcome to the program. Nice to have you.
Thank you so much.
Did you expect, Evelyn, 120 people on the first
no.
run? Well, what did you make of that?
No. I thought we probably would get 30 to 45 because history is not something that's very attractive to many people. Having been doing this for a long time, an average turnout for a historic event at the Out Alliance is about 40 to 50. And since it was on a Thursday night and walking, I wasn't sure that we'd even get 40 or 50. But it was amazing. It equaled the number of people who were once initially involved in forming the Gay Liberation Front out at the University of Rochester, which began this whole movement of liberation and pride.
Carol, what did you think of the night last night?
It blew me away. It was so great. I'm not a native Rochesterian, so the project itself was very interesting to me, but to see so many people arrived, like Evelyn said, in our meetings, we were really concerned about getting maybe 30 or 40 people. And I was very pleasantly surprised, especially by the number of young people that were on the tour.
That's very interesting because even shows like the new version of Will and Grace have poked fun at 20-something people in the LGBTQ community saying, you know, well, we don't really know our history, which is a big stereotype, but the show had an episode on it. And the stereotype was, if you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s now in the LGBTQ community, boy, what you've gone through to pave more rights, and are the 20-somethings appreciating it? And what you saw last night was the answer, looks like it's yes.
There's definitely more interest than in rallies or other events that I've seen in prior years.
Wow.
And it was really striking to me to see the generations of people there. It was very exciting. And before I left, Wayne said to me, he had other meetings he had to get to. He wasn't able to be there. And he said, how many people do you think are going to be there? And I almost said 100 because I'm the optimist.
You know me.
But I told him 50.
Optimistically.
And, optimistically.
50.
50. Yeah. So it was really exciting.
It blew us away.
Yeah.
It blew us away.
All right, so before we even get into what the tour entails, our listeners who are hearing this are going, wow, you blew it up last night. You're going to do a lot more of these? Larry? Yes? Wayne?
Absolutely. Without question. The steering committee will get together soon to discuss it, and the specific committee, which included not only Evelyn and Carol, but Andreas Rao from the city of Rochester. We will get together soon and plan our next tours. We already know that we will do it during Pride again next year. And Evelyn said, we've got to have at least two because you can't have a huge distance for people to be walking. You really have to put things together.
So two different walking tours.
Yeah, right.
And maybe two different sections or two different nights. And certainly, Larry, I mean, I don't want to tell you how to do business, but if you created like a product and you sold it out overnight, I would probably get working on making more of that product real soon.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So it turns out.
Thank you. Thank you for your advice.
Well, you know, there you go. That was free advice. Free advice for you. Larry and Wayne, tell me a little bit about why the Landmark Society decided to do this, a walking tour of historic landmarks in the LGBTQ movement right here in Rochester. And then we're going to kind of talk about how the list came together and how you decided where to go. But what was the genesis of this?
Well, so this whole idea really began, I think, Larry, when Larry and I were down in New York City on some business, and we happened by historic Stonewall Inn. And the Stonewall had just recently been included on the National Register of Historic Places. And so Larry and I got to talking and thought, you know, in Rochester, just like many other communities across the United States, we feel like that we're really at a point where it's up to us to capture the context of the movement. And I think by seeing actual structures and putting the history in the context in structures that are very tangible, I really think it does elevate the interest and the significance and the power behind it. I think that was the, you know, Larry can jump in, but I think that moment there in New York, looking at Stonewall was really, I think, the beginning of this whole initiative, right, Larry?
Yeah, it really was. And in our discussion that day, and as we got back to Rochester and the office, we were concerned that we were going to lose some of these structures. And the timeliness was there. And I've got to tell you, when we announced the initiative, when we had our first group of people coming together just through Facebook, we put out a date that people were going to be coming to the Landmark Society. It was, again, it was outstanding. There were, you know, in our parlors, there were probably 75 people there. Mm-hmm. And the stories, we decided to go around and have everybody tell their stories within the movement, why they were there. It was just stunning and moving, and it made us realize that this is something that people really care about.
Our organization, I think, continues to be focused on making sure that preservation is accessible and meaningful to everyone, regardless of race, gender, orientation, socioeconomic class. And we feel like this is just an expanse of that philosophy.
All right. So that doesn't mean it's easy to figure out where you're going to go. I mean, Evelyn, I've got a list here, list of historic LGBT sites in Rochester, New York. There's like 90 things on this list.
Right.
Is this your work here? The creation of this list?
It's a combination of all of our work. When we had that first meeting, we asked people to write down on a sign-out sheet what sites they would like to have remembered. Now, one of the things that happened there was in 1972-73, there were 14 bars, gay bars, in Rochester. Well, on that list you have in front of you, there are not 14 gay bars because not all of them are historically or landmark significant. And so we picked and chose, but you will find that a pretty thorough list of places where history occurred. And some of those places, like the firehouse on Monroe Avenue, that was the home of the Gay Alliance from 1973 until 2002. So, I mean, the firehouse, I don't think is in jeopardy of being, you know, destroyed or anything, but I believe it is a landmark and a Rochester landmark, not just because of the LGBTQ community, but because of the community, Dockroom, and all of the other places that were homed in that building. So,
all right, so, and before we talk about the three stops, right, in that first tour, so last night you did three. Some of it, again, is just pragmatically, what can we actually walk to in one walking tour? But we should also mention Rochester Pride 2018 is underway now, and you can learn a lot more at rockpridefest.org. So there's the parade, the festival tomorrow. Fest continues on Sunday. And Evelyn, I suspect we're going to talk to you in 2019 about Stonewall 50th anniversary. 50 years since Stonewall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And we're already planning that year. The Gay Alliance will be responsible for putting up an event calendar for 2019 for all of the organizations and groups in Rochester and probably upstate New York to enter events and celebrations that they will be having. In New York City, it's also World Pride. They will have five parades, one in each of the five boroughs, and they've already contacted and had conversations with the UN for interpreters and that whole thing. It will be huge. It will be huge. In 2019, for 50 years, we've been fighting this battle, and it's not over, not by a long shot.
So 120 people last night, about an hour-long walking tour.
Right.
And let's go through it, I guess. Let's start stop number one. Where did you start?
City Hall.
Started at Rochester City Hall. Why City Hall?
Because it's one of the older buildings in Rochester, and you can speak, Larry, more to the landmark piece of that.
Sure.
But in 1977, the CETA grant came up for a vote in City Council. The CETA grant was a federal program to employ underprivileged and unemployed people in Rochester in a low economic area. Charlie Sciano was on City Council, and he protested the inclusion of the Gay Alliance $30,000 grant within the context of a $1 million federal program because he claimed we were going to bring homosexuals to the Alliance and get them enrolled in our work and make people in Rochester homosexuals.
You're going to turn people gay with this legislation.
That's right.
That's right.
Amazing.
Just like that.
So she, the council person was outraged. He said the grant would promote homosexuality, turn people gay. The Rochester Community Chest, which was forerunner of
United Way,
also had concerns. They didn't want to administer the grant if it was going to be used in this way because they worried people would stop giving to the community chest?
People threatened to not give to the community chest. They turned the grant back to the city. And the person who stepped up to the plate was Bill Johnson, who was the Urban League CEO at the time. He took that grant over with the caveat to city council that all of the people who would be funded would be in one batch, and they would approve the batch or not. And it passed.
Yeah, just reading some of the notes that producer Megan Mack, who was on this walking tour last night, put together. Former Mayor Johnson, again, then CEO of the Urban League, said if you replace the word gay with black, it would be a major civil rights violation.
That's right.
And so if you don't replace the word gay, it should be a major civil rights violation if you're going to deny the use of the funds this way.
Right. Yes.
Remarkable. Yeah.
Yes.
Really remarkable stuff there. Larry, you want to add to, about the landmark itself there?
Well, I think the most important point, which anybody who has been to City Hall, especially in the rotunda where we were meeting last night, just is in awe of the beauty of this building. And the most important point was that it was set to be torn down. It was in terrible disrepair, and people were trying to tear the building down, and the Landmark Society and others said no.
When was this?
70s, I believe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this project, I remember reading, and I believe it's outside in a hallway. Those at City Hall would know. There's an article where a federal judge at the time, and I forget his name, wrote an editorial that said it needs to come down. The building is nothing more than a pile of stone, and it's ugly. And our longtime architectural historian, Jean France, who's been on the Landmark Society board for many years, I remember she commented to me, she said, he's right, it is a pile of stone. It's just those stones are arranged in a really beautiful way. You know, so Frank Grasso, who's currently on our board, longtime architect, worked on that project, and now it's just a shining example of the beauty of the architectural heritage of Rochester. But at that time, it was in jeopardy. But that, you know, that's a great example, too, of where you really merge the architectural history and heritage and significance with the history behind this movement, and it emphasizes both.
Yes. And that's important. Very important.
And so after all of that happened, council gets to vote in November of 1977 on this grant, this $30,000+ that was of so much concern to a member of council and to the community chest, and council voted 8-1?
Yes. And Charlie Schiano he was the one vote in opposition. But the grant gave the Gay Alliance its first funding ever from either state, local, or federal government. And it employed three people to take care of cleaning and maintenance and meeting people and giving them information. And it was wonderful.
I don't know offhand where Charlie went over the years, or if there was any change of heart. Do you?
He hasn't had a change of heart, because he was involved with Michael Macaluso and the Decent Majority, number of groups that continue to oppose gay rights and oppose our freedoms.
Hmm. Well, okay. You know, sometimes those stories take different turns. That's why I ask. But so City Hall was stop number one. It is, by the way, for all of us who have to cover it in politics, it's easy to get cynical about it because you're there because it's just politics or you're doing interviews. It's a gorgeous place.
Yeah, it really is.
It really is a special place. Yeah. And you know, we should probably mention, Evelyn and Carol, that City Hall has been the site just, what, this week or a week ago of more conversation about legislation to prevent conversion therapy.
Yes.
Which is somehow still a thing in some places. Just briefly for our listeners who don't know what that is, Carol, you want to explain?
So conversion therapy is a highly dangerous and an unethical way of trying. They focus on children mostly, but there are adults that sometimes even choose to go through it. It's just a very, I think the easiest way to equate it, I equate it to waterboarding, right? So you want to change somebody to the way you think they should be versus how they naturally are, and you put them through hours and days and sometimes even years of just trying to indoctrinate them to your way of thinking. And many times, especially young children, will just give in to that, and because it hurts less, but it doesn't change the essence of who they are.
Sure.
Right? So the same way that those that were tortured will give out any information to make the torture stop, it doesn't change the essence of who they are. And so really, you know, as I said at the press conference with the mayor, it really basically amounts to child abuse. And it's just scary that there are licensed practitioners willing to perform this on young children.
Well, that is in many people's views, I guess I have to hedge as a journalist, but I'll just say that's to the mayor's and city council's credit.
Yes.
That at least that's been addressed. It's sort of amazing that it needs to, but there it is. So City Hall, number one on the tour. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to our panel about the brand new and just newly minted last night, first edition of the LGBTQ Historic Walking Tour through downtown Rochester, part of the new LGBTQ Landmark Initiative with the Landmark Society. Larry Francer, Wayne Goodman are here from the Landmark Society. Carol Ebersole-Weiss, you just heard, who is with the Human Rights Campaign of Greater New York. Evelyn Bailey, who's a historian for the Out Alliance. We're talking about this tour. So you start at City Hall, and number two, you don't got to walk too far. Evelyn, where are you going for stop number two?
Genesee Crossroads Park, which was actually Front Street 40 years ago, but they cemented it over and they made a park behind the Federal Building on State Street.
So you headed over to where the Federal Building is now. Most people recognize that, but it's Genesee Crossroads Park is known as Charles Carroll Park and located where the old Front Street was. Okay.
Yes.
And Front Street was the center of gay activity in Rochester in
pre-Stonewall and
1960s?
60s,
so
yeah.
I'm
absolutely
looking at producer Megan Mack's notes. And again, listeners, Megan was part of the 120 people who packed this tour last night. The 1960s, there was a movement to tear down the buildings. The area was known as the Gay Ghetto. Or Skid Row?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yes. Yes. It would have been the barrio of Rochester at that time. You had, during the day, purveyors. Women would go down to Front Street to buy cloth for sewing, clothes, shoes.
The butchers were there.
Groceries.
I mean, it was right on the canal, so all the lots of businesses.
And also yeah. 14 bars. Really? It was very busy, but there were all walks of life there. As Evelyn said, you had the street walkers, but then you also had the policemen, the politicians, the businessmen going stopping in for a drink. So it was a huge mix of folks that hung out down there.
And this street was targeted as an urban renewal project.
Right.
Right. And then there was also Dick's 43. And at night, you see, the street became the gay hangout. Everybody who was LGBTQ felt safe to go down there and have a drink at Dick's, go to Ma Martin's for dinner, walk down to one of the other bars. It was very gay friendly. It was not a violent area at all.
And so there's also not just the history of what was there, but what happened on September 23rd, 1978. So tell us more about what happened then.
So that was my part of the tour, yeah. So I'll speak to
yeah,
that.
Let's do it.
Yes.
So for the very first time in Rochester history, there was a gathering of LGBT and allies that came together, mostly spurred on by the Save the Children campaign that
Anita Bryant... Is it hard for you to even say it that way?
Well, you can't see air quotes on radio,
yeah.
Right?
Save the Children.
Save the Children campaign that was led by Anita Bryant, which really was just a nice title for gay bashing and
religious rights.
Religious rights.
But she had been successful.
She had been very successful, but she also was a high-profile person throughout the entire country. And, you know, between the Miss America pageant and then getting a gig pushing orange juice and all that fun stuff, people saw her. People saw her on TV. They saw her, you know, in all her luxurious gallantry. And for the people that, you know, for the people that felt the same way that she did, or as Evelyn said, there was our lovely politician here who really just did not think that LGBT people had rights or should have rights or should be treated the same as anybody else in their society. And but they all came together. And the other significant part of that is it's the first time in Rochester history that the media paid attention and told the news of the LGBT community, gay activities and things like that. So it was very exciting in that respect that we finally got recognition and people talking and making it a little bit more mainstream, and especially talking about the issues and the inequities that were going on.
Yeah, so if my history is correct, and some of it comes from the movie Milk, which I saw recently and really liked, by the way.
Yeah.
So in Miami-Dade County, there was a law that would at least allow to prevent discrimination against gay people, and it was overturned. So these protections against discrimination were overturned there. Mm-hmm. Then Anita Bryant wanted to go to California, and that's when Harvey Milk and many others were kind of challenging the people, state senators and others across that state that wanted the same kind of movement that Anita Bryant helped start there in Florida. And there was a question was, are we going to just destroy any protections against discrimination across the country? So the Rally for Rights in Rochester, maybe 1,000 people, you know, 800 yeah. to 1,200 people. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and not all gay people. I mean, straight allies.
Absolutely. Yes.
Straight allies. That's a big show of
yes.
solidarity. That's a very big moment
yes.
in our
yes.
community. So to absolutely understand why it's on your walking tour of historic sites of significance. And I've been down there so many times and didn't know it myself.
Duh.
Sure.
Right. No.
I know.
Another historic fact regarding that, Anita Bryant was to appear at the Dome Arena for a rally for this Save the Children campaign. In 2009, 2008, I had an archival consultant go to the Dome Arena and ask to see the records from 1978 when she was supposed to appear. They don't have a record of it.
Hmm.
It was in the newspaper, and the newspaper accounts recorded approximately 50 people showing up at the Dome Arena. And it was because she was coming to Rochester that they decided to have a rally downtown in opposition to that.
The Rally for Rights.
The Rally for Rights. One of the people who was there was Karen DeCrow, a former president of NOW. And she said very clearly, the witches of Salem have become the LGBT community across the nation. And she was right. The same kind of fear, discrimination, confrontation that women who were in many ways healers and really people who helped the community were seen as not acceptable.
Evelyn, there was something that you always want to be careful to not learn too much from a movie because you know, it's just movies. But I think I am very much ignorant of the divide, real or imagined, that existed between the gay and lesbian community. Was there a divide, and were there steps to heal that divide?
One of the goals of the Rally for Rights was to build bridges of communication between the lesbians and the gay men, mm-hmm. primarily, and to bring other members of the community together and to help people come out. Leonard Matlevich was another speaker at the Rally for Rights. And so the organizers, Patty Evans was one of those. She was also happened to be at Stonewall, had as a goal to bring the lesbians and the gays together and create a unified front so that all of the community would be involved in protesting the discrimination.
Bigotry.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there a divide today?
No.
No.
I'm
glad to hear that.
When the Alliance formed in 1973, there were the lesbians who went to the Alliance first and created the Lesbian Resource Center. Tim Maines identifies that as probably the first gay organization that was begun, really, in Rochester outside of the Alliance. The men were on Brown Street in the back of a business in a burned-out garage with no heat, and in December, it got very cold. Now, the men had money because that's where financial resources usually were in any community, and the women had heat. They came together and moved to the Genesee Co-op, and that's how the women and men joined forces. But that has happened over and over again in our history.
Okay. You want to add to that, Larry?
Well, I do not see any separation within the movement between lesbians and gays. And one thing I did want to bring up was a little bit more about Anita Bryant. And it was really a slap in the face for young gay men who sort of idolized this beautiful Miss America, for her to come out and say that we weren't worth anything. But someone brought up to me last night, and I really do seem to agree, that if it wasn't for Anita Bryant and her movement, our coming out and our resistance and our fighting for our rights may not have happened as quickly. So oftentimes, opposition really brings opportunity. And this woman pointed out that in Dade County, there is one of the strongest gay, lesbian organizations that is fighting for rights and started because of Anita Bryant.
Okay. I'm way late for a break, but I got to get Keith's phone call because he wants to ask about Anita Bryant. So before we move to the third stop on the tour, Keith, go ahead.
Evan, I remember, along with Anita Bryant on a national level, there was a local group, a local gentleman, and I hear him call in occasionally, so he's still around, that would carry the banner locally for Anita Bryant. And I remember they always used to show up whenever the cops would go into adult bookstores and close them down. right before elections, and then they'd reopen. Now, I don't know what happened to the local group, but I do know the guy who was in charge. Like I said, I hear him call in occasionally. And does the group still exist? Do they still have a presence in Rochester? Do your guests know?
I don't know. Guys, no?
Not that I'm aware of.
John Andrus, engineer, is grabbing a microphone. Uh-oh. John's going to tell us something.
I think the guy's name was Mike Macaluso.
Right.
Thank you, John.
That's it, John. I didn't to say it. That's it. And he called in occasionally. And I think he called in when you had the atheist on the other day. Or a couple weeks ago.
We're going to go back and do a little homework on that, Keith. So, thank you. Thank you for that.
And Evelyn brought up Mike earlier. Yeah. So we are aware of
him. All right, yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Keith. We've hit two of the three stops that they had on the tour. Listeners, if you're listening to this going, well, when's your next tour? Like, is it tomorrow? Larry?
Well, it's definitely going to be during Pride next year.
Next year in Pride. That's a year away.
I know. I think we may be able to get one in before Pride. The committee is going to get together, and we're gonna get it out pretty soon, because I'm taking your advice, Evan. if you've got a winning tour, you want to plan the next one and promote it right away.
Well, you've got this outstanding historical information. We're all learning so much as we talk about the Landmark Society's LGBTQ Landmark Initiative and their walking tour, the historic walking tour that happened last night. About 120 people came out. Larry Francer, the biggest optimist you've ever met, thought maybe 50 would come out. So maybe they will do more. And if you want to do that, you should probably call the Landmark Society and tell them. Flood their offices.
Absolutely.
Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to talk about stop number three on last night's tour next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections. Here in Rochester, the Puerto Rican Parade and the Puerto Rican Festival is coming. And we are going to be talking about not only those events, but issues pertaining to the Puerto Rican community here and across the country. Questions about statehood. How about Puerto Rican independence? What options does the local community support? We'll be talking about that Monday on Connections. All right, so let me give you a little picture of what this walking tour looks like so far. Last night, 120 people came out for the historic landmark LGBTQ walking tour, and it started at Rochester City Hall. It went not too far, maybe a block or two, down to where essentially the federal building is now on State Street, across from Pizza Stop, where the park was, and there were so many businesses, a bar, and places where the LGBTQ community really congregated in the 1970s. And then they had that massive rally for rights in 1978. Stop number three, the group last night walks next to where, Evelyn?
St. Luke, St. Simon, Serene Church, Two Saints. And there are many remarkable things about Two Saints. But first, let me have Larry and Ron talk about the historical significance, because I only know one date in that regard.
Oh, okay. All right. So Larry and Wayne, you're up here. So okay. Why don't you tell us about the site? And by the way, it's on Fitzhugh Street, right?
North Fitzhugh.
So not that far to walk last night.
Not at all. And okay. It was really nice. My group, which we actually broke into two groups because there were so many people. One group went over to the federal building. The other one went to Two Saints. And then we switched. And my group, which went to the federal building, then went around back, and everybody actually got to see where Front Street was, and we walked along the canal. It was really beautiful. And then we walked over to Two Saints.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Two Saints is the oldest surviving building that's been, I guess we could say, open to a public or has a public use. It's a very early 19th century building. And they're actually doing some amazing work at Two Saints. We've been working with the Friends of Two Saints. And if anyone has not seen the structure, particularly on the interior, it really is a sight. It's very well preserved. And it really is just one of our community gems.
Nathaniel Rochester himself, again, attended Mass.
Correct,
there.
Yeah.
So a little bit of history there. And it's on this tour, though, I'm looking at producer Megan Mack's notes from last night. St. Luke's was home to the first visible resistance to LGBTQ oppression by the local Episcopal and Catholic communities, supported even some gay weddings in church. Is that right?
Yes.
In the 1970s?
Yes.
I think that would surprise some people.
1977, 78, Reverend Bruce Hansen and Walt Zemanski performed the first weddings in the community in that church.
And I'm looking at, let's see here. Here's a name that folks will know. 1968, Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, issued the Letter on the Pastoral Care of Homosexual Persons, which led to other oppressive acts and the removal of local Catholic priests from presiding at liturgy. So, Evelyn, tell us more about that, yeah.
Dignity Integrity was the first combined chapter in the country within those two churches to really fight for inclusion and representation in all forms of ministry of LGBTQ people. When that chapter formed in Rochester, Bishop Hogan was bishop of the Catholic diocese, and I believe it was Bishop Spears who was bishop of the Episcopal diocese. They were very supportive of having in their diocese a church in which these two groups could come together and worship, and actually gave permission for the Episcopal services and the Catholic services to occur in the same place and in the Episcopal Church. In those days, if you were Catholic and you went to other denominations and attended other services, you were excommunicated. You were thrown out. So for Catholics who were gay, they were, in a sense, already thrown out, and they needed a place to come and form community for support spiritually and socially and in other ways. And then, as we progressed through our history, Catholic priests would celebrate Mass. Episcopal priests would celebrate the liturgy in the Episcopal Rite. And then when Father Ratzinger, lovingly called Rat by most Catholics, came to power in the Vatican, he said no. Bishop Clark, the Bishop of Rochester at the time, was also supportive of DI, and then his hand got slapped by Ratzinger, and he was told, no Catholic priests will be allowed to celebrate the liturgy for LGBTQ people. And that kind of oppression created within the community a resistance movement that carries on today. In fact, at St. Luke's, St. Simon, they have Liturgy of the Word in the Catholic Rite, and the Episcopal Rite continues to celebrate its liturgy in the fullness of that.
I just want to ask you, last hour we had the Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Rochester, Bishop Singh, who was unequivocal in his love and support of the LGBTQ community.
Yes.
And said he can't speak for his brothers and sisters in the Catholic Church, but he can speak for his church, and he's very proud of that. That continues.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. He has been wonderful. Bishop Burrow was also bishop in Episcopal Diocese mm-hmm. here. He was wonderful, very supportive. And Bishop Hogan in the 1970s and 80s kind of ruled by benign neglect. He was very liberal in his thinking, and he did not rise to the occasion of people's objections unless they really made a big noise about it.
Sure, sure. Before I get Stacy and Webster on the phone, just to kind of close the loop on this, did you know Bishop Clark? Do you know Bishop Clark well, retired Bishop Clark?
Yes.
Do you think his heart is in supporting the LGBTQ community?
Yes. He celebrated the liturgy at Sacred Heart Cathedral in the 1990s, welcoming. It was after that in the 2002-2003 time frame that Ratzinger came into power as head of the Sacred Congregation. And
very anti-gay and became, of course, Pope Benedict. And I don't know Bishop Metano well. I will say, you know, I have a lot of friends and a lot of respect for our colleagues who have work over at the diocese. And I think Bishop Metano just seems to be a hardworking, more private person, best I can tell. So I don't know him well.
I don't know him either, Evan.
Do you feel any hope or optimism that locally the Catholic Church is going to be more welcoming of the LGBTQ community? You don't?
No. Not currently. Not with this current bishop. I've not met him. I've only heard of his rubrics, which deny women place in the church, deny LGBTQ men and women a place in the church. The other thing that happened during the DI period between 1970 and 78 was Presbyterians came to DI to worship who were LGBTQ. And that was really the beginning of the More Light community in the Presbyterian Church, which resulted in the call to Janie Spar here in Rochester.
So there's site number three. Where is it again, by the way? It's on Fitzhugh?
North Fitzhugh, and North right abroad.
And, you know, for context, it sits next to the Rochester Academy, which was a major preservation project a few years ago. So there's these two amazing historic structures right next to each other with incredible histories.
I got to squeeze in a couple of listener questions on this. First, Stacy on the phone, Stacy in Webster. Go ahead, Stacy.
Hi, yeah. My wife and I are actually out here visiting for about 6 weeks during the summer, and we're originally from Oakland, California, and I just happened to tune in today and hear about this wonderful program.
Wonderful.
And I'm just wondering if there is a way to, like, look up all this information online, or do you guys have plans for, like, an app to maybe, like, walk through this tour yourself?
Stacy, we have such good news for you.
While I'm here.
Yeah.
Okay. I tuned in at the half the hour, so I'm just curious to learn more.
Yeah, thank you for calling. We've got really good news for you if you're headed back to Oakland or wherever you end up. Number one, you can listen to Connections wherever you go in the world. Just get the WXXI mobile app, because whatever NPR member station you're at, you want to be listening to this one. Also, my understanding is that that there are some plans here for the Larry. You want to answer a question?
Yeah, on the Landmark Society website, we do have information, and at our offices at 133 South Fitzhugh Street, we have copies of the tour, so you can self-guide yourself on the tour as well if you'd like.
Okay, and eventually, you know, maybe we'll have a smartphone audio walking tour.
That'd be great. Yeah,
there's been discussions that we had, and I think when Larry and I were in New York and first started talking about this, you know, your mind starts thinking fairly quickly, and I absolutely could see an app, a walking tour, audio, merge some video, get some interviews, testimonials from people who really know the history and the connections with the buildings. So, you know, more to come.
And watch our website.
So someone like Stacy and her wife, who are only going to be here for 6 weeks, what's the website? How do they find you online to try to learn
www.landmarksociety.org.
Landmarksociety.org.
Right. And please, Stacy, stop on down to the office, and we will give you our great pins that we had printed for the walk, and we'll give you the tour booklet.
And let me just squeeze in one more question from a listener. And this is a good question. Joel says, we hear a lot about preservation and community. Real quick, let's get definitions. Is it only about buildings, or is it about sense of place? You know, so when we talk preservation, we could probably do an hour on that question alone.
That's a great question, and it's a question that I think is evolving and has been evolving in the preservation community for, well, I guess since its inception, for, you know, 100 more years or so. And I think it goes back to the point I made earlier, that we're committed to making preservation accessible and meaningful for all. And in our community, to put that statement in proper context, it has to be more than just Rochester's East Avenue mansions. And we have to be, I think, more flexible if we're going to be more inclusive. It doesn't mean that we lower our standards, but it does mean that sometimes we have to take into account that something that happened on a site or in a building that may not be perfectly preserved is still incredibly significant and important.
I think that's really well said. Larry, happy with that definition?
I am. And just to point out, we're very involved in neighborhood building and economic development. It's not just about pretty buildings that need to be saved.
Yeah.
It's also about finding new uses for them, which really work for the 21st century and for our neighborhoods.
Carol and Evelyn, congratulations on the tour that I know everyone's worked so hard on this. It's off and running. 120 people last night. Just a remarkable show of success from this community. And happy Pride, everyone. We should remind you. Here it is, rockpridefest.org. I should know the website. rockpridefest.org. So you got Silent Disco tonight, Parade in the Fest tomorrow. The festival continues on Sunday. It's going to be hot. The weather's going to be beautiful, and it's a perfect weekend for Pride. And I want to thank all of our guests for being here. Evelyn Bailey is just a walking encyclopedia.
Yes, she is.
She's great. We love you, everyone.
A historian for the Out Alliance, archivist for the LGBTQ community of Rochester. Great having you as always, Evelyn. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
Great to have Carol Ebersole Weiss, who is on the National Board of Governors for the Human Rights Campaign and Western New York Coordinator for the campaign. Great having you. Thank you very much for being here. And Wayne, Larry, have a great weekend. And you've given yourself more work by being so successful.
That's true.
By being successful. The website,
always a pleasure.
Website one more time.
www.landmarksociety.org.
All right. Happy Pride. Happy weekend, everyone. John Andrus, engineer. Megan Max, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely weekend. We're back with you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.